see that our movement is proudly expected to build temples here in Salem, everywhere. When devotees go there, then everyone just expects you to build a temple, and you just it's difficult not to get away with it. It says you just more or less have to do it because the people are coming, giving land and harassing you to build a temple and this and that. And that you felt somewhat disappointed, huh? You went to that Bhopal, you wanted to preach to students, and you couldn't get away with it, with getting into the temple project. So, please tell us about that. Because it's very well known that in the West, Srila Prabhupada very much emphasized the distribution of his books. And the movement in the West, when Srila Prabhupada was present, was very much focused on distributing his books. But in India, at least from the ordinary perspective, the movement was not focused on books. It was, at that time, it was focused on building temples. But Prabhupada saw that as a platform
that's
to
about
develop.
Best way to express it, a platform.
Mm. It wasn't the be-all and the end-all. It wasn't the purpose of Prabhupada's... Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to say that, I haven't come to this world as a mason.
And then he got so frustrated, he said, if I could sell the marble.
Yeah, they're better to take all the marble and sell it off and use the money for printing books. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, many of the things he said was so extreme. Extreme means he rejected the material and material concept. Yeah, so go on.
Well, in conjunction to what you're saying, when Srila Prabhupada started these projects, more so for Vrindavan, but also in the background for Bombay and for Calcutta, he did arrange some donations for Vrindavan. But he was arranging the donations in the form of books. he could have easily sent the money and spared us from having to sell the books and then to hopefully collect the money. For instance, a 3 lakh rupee of, I think it was 3 lakhs, I'm not sure. Approximately 3 lakhs rupees of donation came from the BBT in Los Angeles, and they sent books to India. And
that's equivalent to something like 50 lakhs today, probably.
Yeah, at least.
At least, yeah.
And Srila Prabhupada, he could have just had them transfer the cash. In fact, in those days, to get cash from outside was a bit easier than now. I used to handle the inward remittances, and they weren't very strict about taking permission from the Reserve Bank of India for receiving inward remittances that they are now from foreign contributions, for whatever reason that is, without going into it. So Srila Prabhupada sent it, and the principle was that those books should be transformed into the donation again in rupees by selling them. So in that way, even that was as a direct donation, and there's a letter in regards to that. Srila Prabhupada wrote to Gurudas and also I think to Tamal Krishna Goswami that this money was there, and then he mentioned that Kartikeya Mahadevia had agreed that he would take a certain quantity of those books, I think 2,000 copies or 3,000, and sell them for 50 rupees each. And that was 1.5 lakhs, and then Prabhupada explained, I don't remember the precise rupee value, and that you could sell the rest and then you know, get the money you need for Vrindavan. This is a good tactic. Instead of giving the money, you give the books in kind, you sell the books, you do some work for it. But in terms of the work, it's not just work like Prabhupada sent, you know, some Western thing like ghee and sell the ghee in the market. And you work for it, which is also Prabhupada didn't want to just throw people money. He wanted them to work for it. But the work that they did was to distribute books. And similarly, all of the construction other than donations, outright donation for construction, was coming from different parties who contributed here and there. Sometimes they said they would and didn't. So if you read the Vedabase, it's confusing who really contributed, but there would be donations promised. And different traveling parties, mostly sannyasis, like Yashodananda Swami and Mahamsa and Guru Kripa with Yashodananda Swami and Tamal Krishna organized a traveling party, and then there was Garga Muni's party. They would go around and distribute books, and then this is a little bit of the problem, is that they were supposed to send the money to BBT and they weren't always in. It was a, what do they call that? An empty, a hole with a hole without the pot, you know. This is saying that there's a hole in the pot. Mm. This was a hole without the pot.
Basket case.
Yeah, it was a vast leakage, like total leakage. You know, you have a pot and it has a hole, and whatever you put in it, the bigger the hole, quicker it goes, reach, then it becomes like a pipe. You know, this was no pipe, no bucket, it just went. So some money were coming back, and you know, people would, you know, they would make members and send contributions from the other half. So something was there. So this was part of also Prabhupada's, in a sense, like a trick. Instead of just sending outright donations, he sent donations in cat in form. You can say cash or kind. How will you donate? When you go to people for preaching, you can say you can give in cash or kind. So depending upon what they have, it may or may not be useful. And it certainly, you know, if someone gives steel, then you use the steel directly. Like here, someone gave the wood for this place, and we can use it directly. But if he gave something that you had to sell first and then get that, that's what Prabhupada was doing. And that was books. There was always books. Everything came back to the books. Discuss more or another
one? Yeah, you want to discuss more about that? At that time, of course, there were only English books. And at that time in India especially, and especially in North India where Prabhupada focused more, English was not much known, so he wanted the books translated also.
Yeah, that was slowly starting in 74, 75, and Yasho was starting in Gujarati. So the first two languages, if I recall, were Gujarati and Hindi that were being translated. Mm-hmm. And Oriya came,
Gorgavan. Bengali?
Bengali, yes, there was Bengali, that was starting, true.
And what about Bhagavad Darshan? Prabhupada wanted to get that going also.
Yes, that's a whole other subject. Bhagavad Darshan, to discuss Bhagavad Darshan and get a good perspective on it, in my humble opinion, would be to also understand back to Godhead. Let's skip through the Prabhupada's original publication. Mm. Because that he was using that for preaching. He would go around every place in India and he'd have printers. What is that, Gaudiya Pada, the one he printed?
Well, when he was with Keshav Maharaj, it was the...
No, after that, when he had the League of Devotees, he printed like a little magazine.
That was back to Godhead, no?
Back to Godhead. Okay. Yeah. Mm. Sorry, some memory distortion. Mm. So Prabhupada told me how he used to do it. He used to go to places, and he, in Connaught Place, there was, where there is the Halika Bazaar now, there used to be a tea house, and he used to go there in the tea house. So he was the original Back to Godhead distributor. And he started Back to Godhead in America, and actually Tamal helped him with that, and others, including...
Distribution.
Yeah, and kind of producing it. It was very, just like a mimeograph thing.
But production started in New York before.
It really started, yeah, there was some in New York, but it really started to get going in San Francisco and Los Angeles. Tamal's distributed in San Francisco.
They printed 500. Yeah.
They printed 500 mimeograph.
Tamal picked up...
Mimeograph means like Xerox.
He picked up the... He made it big, Tamal.
He pushed for that. And then they started the Back to Godhead in color, and then they printed it with Dynapon in Japan and could get good prices, but you had to print at least 10,000. I forget all the different numbers.
No.
So at one time in the United States, the Back to Godhead was emphasized equally with big books.
Yeah.
The smaller books
all
were going
out. Too.
But the emphasis was on big books. And it doesn't mean that that's the only way, but the emphasis was on big books. Part of the reason of emphasizing big books was that Srila Prabhupada was continuing to translate and to produce, well, it's actually more than translation, but to produce the Srimad Bhagavatam, and then in just a few months' time, he produced the 17 volumes of Chaitanya Charitamrita. So the BBT, in conjunction with the book distributors, parties, and the leaders of those in America, they would place fairly substantial orders for those first editions. And so they were printing 20,000 at a time. So 20,000 at a time of 17 volumes is 3,40,000 books. And then the Bhagavad Gita, they were going up to 700,000 copies. Now,
they printed more than a million at one time.
Yeah, there was a time they print after 700,000 at Kingston Press, then they printed a million. Then they actually did
one print run. The whole train full
of
paper.
It was like in America, it was the largest print run of any book in many years. 1.5 million of a single book. You know, single book. It actually, and the man who owned the press became very proud. And made, you know, when there was like a. You know, on TV, an interview, and he was so proud that he was printing this particular book. You know. It was good business for him, even if the cost was lower. But the devotees could suck it up. But this, they were not distracted by this, as it is now. And Bhagavad Gita, Back to Godhead, and Bhagavad Darshan has kind of fallen through the cracks here. But it was meant as a preaching magazine, and Prabhupada gave the format, including some, the core would be an article by him and by the Bhaktivinoda Thakura, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada, and some other articles. And then there was like a million copies a month of Back to Godhead. But they didn't have many subscribers for here in India. Actually, I was discussing, I don't want to pursue this conversation too much.
Well, we have it in Tamil.
You have it in Tamil. And so Srila Prabhupada wanted this to become lots of subscribers.
Mm.
Prabhupada asked me to do that, and he asked me that you use your brain, and he gave me some hints that I was doing on my own to have a million subscribers to
the Hindi edition or the English edition?
I think it was the Hindi edition.
Mm. Like he mentioned Kalyan?
Yeah, well, we were going to...
That magazine is so popular, or was so popular.
Was it? I don't know how many subscribers they have. I mentioned Sunday magazine, but that was in the newspaper.
That magazine, that was a religious from Gorakhpur, Gita Press.
Yeah, I don't know how many subscribers Kalyan.
They had a lot. You used to see it around.
But I was a little pushed out of the picture, so I didn't fight for doing it. But someone else said they were going to do it, but it was never done. And then slowly, that idea got lost. But in Gujarat, they did this. Yasho, he got subscribers. And when I moved into managing in Orissa, our first goal was to have 10,000 subscribers. And we did that within 6 months.
In Bengal and Orissa, the Bhagavad Darshan has been going on continuously for many years.
Yeah.
In Gujarat, it stopped and started many times, and it's been going on steadily now for what, 4 years, 5 years? More. Yeah, because the last Bhagavad Darshan festival we had, it was the 7th or 8th. Yeah. So it's steady now in Gujarati and Tamil. And also,
how many subscribers they have in Tamil?
12,000, something like that.
That's good. Yeah, I've seen the English.
And they're also that includes subscriptions which are sent free to libraries, politicians, religious personalities, and so on. So that's being increased by sponsorship also.
Right. Actually, it has two principal purposes, but in America, it's changed that purpose, and in India, it's changed it even more. The primary principle, it's an introductory literature to get people on the track of Krishna consciousness. So, of course, how it might be produced in India and how it might be produced in the West might be considered to be different. And it's, the other part is to help those who are in Krishna consciousness to keep contact with the devotees who they might not be otherwise in contact with, and to help them to cultivate their Krishna consciousness. But now it's become more like a tourism magazine in America, with all types of tirthas being shown. And Prabhupada didn't put much importance to this, and many of the things don't have anything to do with it's people's attempts at creating something sensational and thinking, well, we'll talk all about rape, and you know, there's a whole big article about rape, and you know, oh, there's a big thing, and you know, so let's get people why there's this rape, and you know, how Krishna.
But Prabhupada, he took up topical subjects in Bhakti Godhead, and then he
so
commented
like
on
that. Not so sensational.
There was one funny one.
Crime was one.
Yeah, crime, why and what to do. That was from an interview with Lieutenant Muzi in Chicago. But even in India, he said that Judge Bernard Shaw has congratulated Mahatma Gandhi on his 82nd birthday, and has wished and said that, well, we only wish that it was his 22nd and not his 82nd. So we join him in this noble thought, but at the same time we should know that it's impossible because the inexorable hand of time.
And then he
just goes on.
A door opener.
Yeah.
Yeah, but these articles now appear to be too much about the door opener. And at the end there's like a little, oh yes, Krishna consciousness.
Oh, by the way, you could chant Hare Krishna when you're getting raped.
So it's all an amount of desire and organization that springs from
I can't say, I didn't see it, so I shouldn't be so sarcastic.
So, anything else on that?
On book distribution, well, it's big topic. Bhagavad Darshan, big topic.
Yes, so it needs to be a big topic more on the doing side than the philosophy.
Oh, I see, doing. Well, I just said that Prabhupada, on one hand, he said that he emphasized books more than temples, but on the other hand, he personally put so much energy into building these temples, and there were these temples, Vrindavan, Mayapur, and Bombay, which served as they were the prototypes for so many temples to be built. Then everywhere in other cities, people said, "Oh, we want a temple like that," and everywhere he showed it could be done. Actually, at that time, as I remember, practically the only people building temples in India were the Birlas, who for some different reasons they were building temples. Temple building was not in fashion, but it's come, and there are all kinds of temples which are being built now.
Yeah.
Prabhupada inspired that. But he personally put so much energy into it. He a lot of his time and thought water.
As I was mentioning,
putting manpower, money.
To get himself out of putting that energy. And once Mayapur was done, he removed himself.
No, but for building these temples, when he said the books are most important, and he put so much energy into book production, but then he also put so much energy into these temples and pushed devotees until they were crying and blooping. And
I think it's easy to understand that at that time, everything considered, that without his personal input, that these projects would not have been made. They could have been made, but the possibility would have been that it would have taken...
No, the movement would not be... we wouldn't have a movement in India.
And as soon as they were established, everything got changed. So the sooner they were established, then he could change the focus to the real business. So
yeah, I had a personal experience of that in Baroda when we had a half shell of a building and the temple wasn't properly built, and we had a temporary temple in the basement, and from outside it didn't look at all impressive, and from inside it also didn't look impressive. And no one, and it just remained like that, stagnant for years. They did a lot of collection, and then they ran out of steam, as the saying goes. And then all of a sudden, they thought, okay, all right, let's build a temple. And then as the temple was being built, and you could see the shape, it started to look like a temple, people started to come more. And then when the temple was opened, it went overnight from being a place where, actually when I first went there, there was the main discussion was going on between the two grihasthas who were the residents there, along with one big fat UP Wala Brahmachari who was, anyway, we won't talk about him. No, he hadn't come at that time. The question was that one old man comes in here every morning to pass stool in the toilet, and one of the devotees, there was the president and the vice president, and that was it. So the vice president said we should stop him coming, and the president, Bhaskar Ghosh, said, well, at least someone's coming. It was like that.
This is an unusual reason to approach Krishna. This is a new one.
So
you're going to be widely quoted for this.
But when the temple was opened, overnight it became a mecca. There were hundreds of people coming. So it was like that with these temples and with our whole movement. It transformed our movement. Prabhupada had the vision to see this.
And the respectability.
The respect and the whole vision of how people saw us changed. And this movement would not be as it is going on in India now. We're all running on Prabhupada's mercy, not only in some kind of nebulous, well, it's not nebulous, but in a less easy to perceive spiritual way, but even in terms of the respect and the facilities, this has all come from Prabhupada's vision that he made these temples. He knew that this would establish our movement, which it very much did. And if that hadn't been done, our movement would be maybe something like this Jaggi Vasudev or some insignificant thing that hardly anyone knows anything about. He had the vision and he pushed it like anything. As devotees were practically crying and blooping, and he kept on bringing more devotees. He pushed it, he forced it. Otherwise, mostly devotees, the Indian devotees were hardly joining, and capable Indian devotees were hardly joining, and then, and even the ones from the West, they were only capable because Prabhupada made them capable in most cases. Most cases they were hippies, most of Prabhupada's disciples, not all. Most Varna Sankara, Prabhupada cited the hippies as prime examples of Varna Sankara. But Prabhupada, he gave them life and direction and trained them. So they were able to get something done, but it was a lot of insistence from Prabhupada. One thing I see is that
incessant is his insistence.
Yeah. day and night, literally. One thing I see is that in our movement, it seems that to some extent we're going on in a mechanical kind of way, that it's a straightforward, it's like a machine process now. We go to a place, we get some money, we get some land, we build a temple, we distribute some books, and things are going on, and we're thinking, well, you know, maybe in future the whole world will become Krishna conscious, and we're doing our duty and waiting for things to happen. But Prabhupada, he made things happen. He didn't wait for it. He went to the West. His godbrothers thought, well, Priti Vite Ache Jato Nagara Digram Savata Prachahoi Bimorana. May start this sometime it will happen. But Prabhupada, he didn't wait for it to happen. He made it happen. He pushed it, and for he had a vision and he pushed it. And he made disciples, and he, in the West, people had no idea what it means to serve a guru, and he drilled it into them. You have to do what your guru says, which was, some people criticize him for that he was trying to control them or something, but they needed that. And he also wanted to use them in Krishna's service. Many fell away. Shama Sundar, our godbrother, gave this example. He's, as those of you who know him, he's very much interested in military history.
The old Shama Sundar?
No, the
Jyotish.
Yeah. He's living in Bangalore now. So he gave this example. D-Day in Normandy is still celebrated in Britain. It's turned the tide of the Second World War. That's what they say. Of course, the Russians were on the other side. They never give any credit to the Russians. When the Allied troops invaded France, so there were thousands of on these amphibious crafts crossing from Britain to France, and they with soldiers, and they had to come onto the beach and attack the German positions who were fixed with machine guns. So it was understood that thousands of men were going to die, and especially the first ones. But then some would get through, and that actually happened. Some got through, and they took over the German positions, and it was a success. So he gave this example that many of Prabhupada's disciples, they fell away, but Prabhupada engaged them, and it was the things he was sending them to do. Even Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur sent some of his best disciples to England, and Prabhupada sent people who had practically no knowledge of anything. Even when just after Prabhupada left, some of Prabhupada's senior disciples were going to see Sridhar Maharaj in Navadvip, Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Maharaj. And he commented that these are not, because they were supposed to be gurus at that time, he said, these are not professors, these are students. So, because actually the knowledge in terms of the depth of knowledge of Vaishnava philosophy wasn't very much. After 9 years or so of active life in Krishna consciousness, the depth and breadth of the knowledge might not be much. So many fell away, but Srila Prabhupada, you might say that Prabhupada almost, he could understand that they would do, but he pushed them, you know, not that he forced them, you know, anyone has the choice to stay or go. But they gave their youth for spreading this mission, then they won't be bereft of the mercy. They're just like the soldiers, they died in D-Day, and what did they get? Well, I guess they go to hell. But, they're honored up to the present day in England. Every year they have Poppy Day, in which they remember the soldiers of World War II who died, and quite a percentage of them died in that one day. Another thing I was thinking, take it away from you a little bit, is that, well, sometimes we hear from, well, we used to come from, we don't hear much from Madhu Pandit these days, but we used to hear it would come down that, well, you know, Prabhupada's disciples, they're all hippies, and we're all smart, high-class, educated Indians. Yeah, we're a bunch of useless people, but Prabhupada, he engaged us, and even though some of them or many of them have reverted to being hippies, just like the we were talking about one of the presidents of ISKCON Vrindavan when we were there in Delhi.
Oh yes.
Yeah. But
he's very marginal now.
But it should not be forgotten that what dedication and sacrifice and difficulty they went through, so that now Indian people can come, and otherwise the Indian people weren't coming. Prabhupada wanted the Indian people to come, but they weren't coming.
Well, that's a discussion. Which,
okay, take it up.
Well,
we don't want
to open a discussion that's a big discussion, but the discussion is this concept of, which I understand why you bring it up, and I understand it probably in the same way as you, as the scholarship, or knowing the philosophy, in terms as a philosophy, that you know a lot of Shastra and can explain things backed up by Shastra. And Srila Prabhupada gave an example for this. He says that these are the law books for Krishna consciousness, these books. And when devotees would go out on book distribution, oh, I have a funny book distribution story to tell, he would always be coming back to this point that you shouldn't just be distributing these books, but you should be knowing these books. But out of the two, to get Krishna's mercy, and this is not eliminating the importance of knowing the philosophy and realizing the philosophy, which are two different things. Prabhupada viewed it that this is a realization of the philosophy, taking up Krishna Seva, and there's so many verses in the Gita itself that back this stance, and from Srila Prabhupada's personal association, we saw this. His emphasis on application and realization of Krishna consciousness more than, so to speak, an academic study. But both of us are supposed to be there. Sadhu, Shastra, Guru, we should not be doing things whimsically. When we preach, the more that we have a depth of spiritual knowledge by proper hearing of the Vedic literature, the more we can be assured that we're nicely speaking and very specifically guiding those who hear. It's not supposed to be something whimsical. And there are many, many reasons for knowing the philosophy. But there are situations which duplicate here, in which Srila Prabhupada preferred me to speak over one of his very senior and very well-learned godbrothers. And I kept on insisting that I didn't want to speak.
One of your godbrothers?
No, one of his godbrothers.
Oh.
Yes. I don't want to bring it, because in my book I'm going to bring it, but without mention. There's a lot of footnotes on that particular application. I'll tell you later.
Anna? He's not very noted.
Anyway.
Mm. Okay.
I'm purposely withholding it, because I don't want that. It gets contorted, and then, you know, why Prabhupada was thinking this. So we're a little bit in the section of preaching and knowledge. I'll give one example. Srila Prabhupada's first initiated disciple, his name was Acharya Prabhakar. And he actually was so learned that the Shankaramat, even though he is basically something like a Vaishnava, had made him the Acharya at one point of the mat, because he knew the philosophy of the Shankar better than anybody else. So somehow, I don't know, he became the
We find that with scholars. They know all the different philosophies.
Yeah.
Like Lakshmi Tartacha. He knows all the philosophies of all the different... He can explain it better than the acharyas. They know all the philosophies. They don't believe it, but they know it.
So Srila Prabhupada was encouraging me to open a center in his center, which was in Kirti Nagar in Delhi. There's some reasons. He felt that that would be a good situation for me and that it would help Acharya Prabhakar. Srila Prabhupada had introduced me to Acharya Prabhakar before I met Acharya Prabhakar, and he said that he explained how he was his first student and they would sit sometimes the whole day speaking in Sanskrit about the philosophy, which also meant that Prabhupada was... And Prabhupada said, perhaps he is the greatest living Sanskrit scholar in the world. So this was my, you know, how Prabhupada introduced me to who this personage was. So I had a lot of experience how Prabhupada did things during Pandal programs. He would have us bring important people and they would give a little talk, and then he would have one of us give a comment on that talk and then link that to, you know, give a preface for Prabhupada speaking on the subject. Sometimes the speaker didn't speak on the subject at all, and then we'd have to kind of shift here, and then Prabhupada would give, sometimes take from both talks, sometimes take a little from each, whatever, and then he would give the presentation. So we had opened a center in Delhi in a very prominent area and had a big hall with seats and rug and bookcases around for the educated elite. There was, instead of seeing the deities, they would come and sit in a hall. And Prabhupada actually wanted this style, not only for America.
How was this?
In Delhi, in 1973 to 74, Anand
Niketan. And how did we end up in Lajpat Nagar in that little house?
It's a long story. Srila Prabhupada's vision for the West was very different than has manifested. Although, you know, there's a lot of his vision that manifested that is there, is his vision. But he was pushing, like in Los Angeles, they had
before
a church.
That was the Bengali market.
He had a church, and he told them not to take out the seats and not to take out the stained glass and not to put the deities, but just to have like a stand, a podium, we call it, a lectern, and have people speak, and people would bring their shoes in and sit on chairs. And then if for the devotees, or those who had developed their devotional interests and could appreciate deities, you know, and that it would be meaningful to them, rather than show them Radha Krishna deities, for instance, first, that they should come and they should hear philosophy and hear chanting and take prasadam, and when they were ready to come to deity worship. And for the sophisticated gentlemen and ladies of Delhi, Prabhupada had a similar idea, that there would be a hall, they could come and sit, and we were in an area where there was an embassy, so Westerners would be included. And then we present them the philosophy, and upstairs, just like in most of the temples, many of the temples in Vrindavan, there's a courtyard, and then there's a room on the end of the courtyard where the deities are. Actually, even the big temples are like that in a sense, like Radharaman, the deities are up there, or Jaipur, Radha Govinda, and there's a courtyard where people come and they see the deities from afar. Radharaman is exclusively like that, like a closet kind of thing, in a room. And you're not inside that building, they're separate. So we did that in Delhi. So I was having programs, and with all these things in mind, Prabhupada's also careful on how we mix with people, including his godbrothers, even the best of them. I thought to have Acharya Prabhakar give an introductory talk, and then which he was willing to do. He was quite humble with me. Prabhupada introduced us each to each other by letter and then in person. So all of this going on, and I had Acharya Prabhakar give a little talk, and then Srila Prabhupada came. It was May 23rd, 1974. And then he asked me what had gone on since his last visit, and in the course of bringing that up, I had seen him like 2 weeks before. I mentioned that I had Acharya Prabhakar give the talk. I thought he would be happy because he was encouraging this marriage, so to speak, this union between him and me. both sides, you know, but more on my part to utilize his facility and get him involved again. Prabhupada said practically he's become a hippie, his long hippie hairs. So, but he was, you know, properly behaved. He hadn't fallen like that the way a Western hippie or a modern Indian hippie would fall. So I thought, you know, to present this, and I was expecting a positive result. And Prabhupada stopped and he says, "No, why did you let him speak?" And then Prabhupada began his explanation of this statement. He is not following. You are following little. Then Prabhupada gave him the example of the Gaurishankar temple in Chandichok, just at the entrance of Chandichok when you're coming from the Red Fort on the left side. There's all flowers, and behind that flower market, it's there because there's a temple, a very famous temple. And he says, professional speakers, they present the Ramayana, and people come, they sit, they listen, and there's no effect. He said, if he speaks, there will be no effect. But because you follow little, there will be some effect. So this is an example of a person who knew the philosophy in and out, like backwards. He could defeat anybody, including all the scholars of Gaudiya Math or all the other places, easily. He knew everything. But because he wasn't following, then he had no potency. But both things need to be there.
Mm. Okay, shall we finish there?
Yeah,
we're finished. Okay.
So, yeah. Thank you all very much for allowing me to avail of your kind association. I would just preface the statement that as I've been coming here for the last year, I can only say what I'm experiencing because I'm talking about what I experience, a progression in what I'm talking about. But when I come here, I feel this, if I'm to know what it is or not, I feel this like Vaikunth. It's very nice. And each time I come, I feel this is there. For years, I've been going in and out of one particular devotee enclave, which is quite vast. They have many, 1,500 or 1,800 acres at least, New Vrajadam. And anybody who enters New Vrajadam, I don't care who they are, they get affected, that place, because the deity worship is so wonderful and the spiritual atmosphere is so wonderful and the devotees keep it so beautiful and very clean. Everybody who comes there, they're instantly transformed. You don't have to do anything.
That's in
Hungary, in the center of Hungary. They have 75,000 people who come as tourists and they pay money. It's not a money-making enterprise, but they pay some money to enter and then they get some prasadam. And every person who comes there transformed. It's such a powerful atmosphere because of the conscious attempt at purity of devotional service. And in all aspects, everything is going on there, preaching and book distribution and prasadam and cleanliness is emphasized and deity worship and sweetness of kirtan. But because of this collective effort, the result is as soon as you go there, I watched thousands of them come and watch there. It's just such an impact. So this is your credit that you're making this attempt at the purity of devotional service in this dham, which is evolving. Scattered blocks building, and so as you keep up this effort, then you know, who am I to know what's Vaikuntha? You know, I'm just a dredge from the street, you know, lower than the street, the microbes on a street dog. But for what it matters, it's my impression, and I thank you kindly for letting me avail of your nice Vaishnava association here. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Thank you very much for sharing some drop of your